Mr. Chippy Realto.
I just got in touch with him, and I haven't seen him since that time, 47 years ago. As I say, at that time was Indul Alley, and with him and quite a few more, was then posted to a place called Orchard. I think it's in the central provinces of India, and discovered that we've been transferred from the Royal Scots Fusiliers to the Lancashire Fusiliers, and was going to undergo training for long-range penetration behind the Japanese lines.
What was your reaction to that?
Very, very mixed. I didn't like the idea one little bit at the time. I suppose, in a way, we were really worried about it. Going behind the Japanese lines, I mean, the Japanese had a very good reputation of being the best fighters in the world and never defeated. And in fact, he was more or less known as a Superman, wasn't he, at that time? All over the Pacific, India, and Southeast Asia. So it wasn't with great relish that we found out where we were and what we've started training. But as time went on, we started marching around in full equipment, field service marching order, and then it's got to field marching order with a couple of bricks in your pack. Then you graduated to two great big tins of bully beef, which are wrapped in blankets and stuck in your pack, and you went out on route marches and this business. And you gradually worked up the full equipment, which was weighed about 60 to 70 pounds. I was posted to a commando platoon, which was also in the commando platoon, there was attached to them was Royal Engineers, which were explosive experts, and they started showing us how to lay booby traps, use of explosive. I think we mostly used gelignite and a plastic explosive, which was 808, I think it was, code number. I know this particular one was, when we first handled it, they says, you know, if you handle this, it says you'll get a terrific headache, but don't worry about it. And consequently, they always gave us a lump and made us handle it till we got a headache. So we knew what it was, you know, there was nothing to worry about. And they showed us how to lay booby traps and how to use this thing. I think our job there was more or less to assist them if need be, also to protect them while they were doing the job they were trained to do.
How did you lay a booby trap?
Oh, I can't really remember now how these booby traps were laid. No, I just can't. I've often thought of this. How did we do some of them? I think we took a lot of chances with some of that we did.
And so this commando platoon was just, you were just attached to them for training?
No, we were attached to them for the whole campaign, because it was also part of our job was the building of plane strips. We had control of river crossing to get all the columns and mules and equipment across rivers. And this sort of job was part of the commando platoon job as well. So we was trained a little bit in everything, really, on that side of it. We then...
But were the commando platoon part of the Chindits?
Oh, yeah. Well, to sort of break down, a battalion, a brigade of Chindits. I was a member of the 77th Brigade Chindits. A brigade consisted then was, I think, four battalions. In the 77th Brigade, it was the 1st South Staffordshire Regiment, 1st King's Liverpool, 1st Lancashire Fusiliers Battalion, and a battalion of Gurkhas. Now, each battalion was split into two, and these were known as columns. Now, each column was then broken down into companies and platoons. As I said, you had the command level platoon, you had a reconnaissance platoon, you had a mortar platoon, you had a Vickers machine gun platoon. And then you had your infantry platoons.
Which column were you in?
I was in the Lancashire Fusiliers. We had two columns, 50 column, and the column that I was 20 column.
And which company were you in?
I was of the commando platoon.
Do you know the name of the company?
The column commander was a Major Shuttleworth. Our platoon commander was Captain Butler. Captain Butler was a captain in the Guards Cavalry and had volunteered to come on this campaign. He later, I believe, after the war, finally he was raised to the rank of general, and I hear he was killed on Salisbury Train in a helicopter crash sometime in the 60s. He was a good officer. So that's the sort of rough breakdown of what a column is, and that's how you always matched, was in column, was one behind the other. You also had with each platoon, what have you? You had its mules, whatever the company or platoon was. It carried the equipment. There was mules carrying mortars, mortar ammunition. There were mules carrying, ours carried the explosives. And other mules carried the wireless sets. Everything, that heavy stuff, was carried by the mules. And the chap I was telling you about a few minutes ago, up to White City, he was a muleteer. He had our mule. But White City is actually after we went in.
So you were saying that you did this plastic explosives training with the commando platoon.
Mm.
Then what happened?
The next thing, I suppose, that happened was that we started to move up across India and up the Brahmaputra and then into Assam.
Did you meet any of the VIPs from the Chindits, like Wingate himself? Or?
On training you only occasionally saw Wingate from a distance. Mike, you saw come and go.
Mike Cowler.
You didn't sort of... Well, we didn't open up with them, they didn't open up with us. Just a typical army sort of thing. But it was only later on we saw Wingate, and he did have a word with us.
Where was that?
Well, this was actually the night we flew in.
We'll come on to that later then. Now, you said you moved up towards Burma. Mm. Can you tell me about that?
Well, there's nothing much I can remember about that, really. we moved up. I don't know just how many weeks or days it was before we actually flew into Burma. But we just carried on with the same training and what have you until the time come. That time was at the airstrip, and they had the American pilots for the gliders and the DCs.
Which airstrip was this?
Well, I think it was an airstrip at Sillette. I think it was Sillette they called it. I've often tried to think of the, just where it was, but I think they called it a place called Sillette.
Yeah, Sillette is in Assam.
Is it? How it could have been Sillette. I just can't remember the name. I mean, when you're on this sort of training, from joining the Lancashire Fusiliers, and this, of course, it was a secret operation, and so we weren't allowed out with no communication much at all with anything outside world. So, I mean, dates, days, time really didn't mean anything. Just another day, whether it be Saturday, Sunday, Monday, or whatever. I mean, days just as the whole campaign went, time went. We just, you know, we just didn't know what day it was. Didn't really care what day it was. It was just another day. And this sort of happened from that time. I'd say we weren't allowed in any. I think it was Jansey. I think it was the nearest place that we was to. But I don't think we never went to Jansey. We weren't allowed out because of the operation that we were on. At that time, we wasn't. I don't know exactly when it started, but I don't think. I think it's when we joined the LS that we weren't even allowed to write home. We they would send letters home once a month, providing the War Office would do this, providing we were all right. Or perhaps we'd get a letter. I have one of the letters there. I'll show you later. A copy of the letter that was sent home every month.
Just as you remember the month that you reached the airstrip near Sillette?
No, I can't. I can't really. I know it was March the 6th when we flew in. But how long we was up in that area before we went? I know it wasn't long, I don't think.
What did you do at the airstrip at Sillette in preparation for going in?
Well, we just more or less carried on with different types of training and what have you. It was the case, really, that the training was over, and I suppose in one way they gave us a bit of relaxation before we... You know, they put a lot of pressure on us in the training. Although we carried on with so much training, I know, while I was in Assam.
Who was in charge of the training that you took part in?
Our own training, you were trained as a column. Basically, you always did most things. You had your own individual training within the column. But your columns always went out together. You was always in column. You see, you know, that you'd go off in your column and they'd come across to a great river to do your training, to get all of them across that river. This type of thing.
How did you feel about going in?
Into Burma?
Yes.
Not very happy. I'm probably scared stiff. But the thing was, I think, really, I mean, right from going back to joining the LFs, a lot of the men, we were the young soldiers, we were the last of the reinforcements. These men in this first battalion, which was a regular battalion, Some of these men had been in Africa. Some had come in at Dunkirk. They were, to us, battle-hardened soldiers. And we were the raw recruits, you sort of thing. And I think they got it into their heads that they were going to have to look after us. And which they did a good job of, actually, because, you know, on the training, when things got really hard, I mean, there was always somebody there to help you. The mucking in spirit, I mean, the spirit was out of this world. You got so that you were proud of your own column. You got so that you didn't do anything to let your column down. You don't do anything or say anything because you were Mike Calvert's 77th Brigade. You were jealous of your own brigade, you know. You were proud of your own brigade. And this was a sort of thing that sort of came naturally to you. You know, you were... did shine anything on, you know, you thought, well, go sick or something. The first thing they'd say, Chief, you wanted to go sick for any reason. I got a boil right on my back. And I was going to go sick, and I was just going out on a scheme. Well, I took a hell of a lot of stick because I was excused this scheme. I was dodging the column. I was letting the brigade down. I was letting the column down. You always had a mucker. You did everything in pairs. All the time on the training, you ate together, you slept together, you was on guard together, you did much virtually everything. There's always two of you. You went for a wash, two of you went to go for a wash, or what have you. Because I said I wasn't going on this scheme because of this boil, I was letting him down. Till, I mean, you got so much ragging from the lads that I went to the MI orderly and I said, give me the biggest lump of cotton wool you've got. He said, what do you want it for? I said, I want to stick it on this boil. I said, I'm going on this scheme. And I did.
Were you ordered to have a mucker?
Yeah, well, it was a rule, yes. I don't know whether you've given order. You were paired off. And this is your mucker. You was all paired off together.
By the sergeant?
By your platoon sergeant.
You said that Wingate came to give you a speech before you went in.
No, not before we went in. It was on the night they were taking off, and we was just on the edge, on the strip, and this figure came across. I said, look, there's Wingate coming across. So I remember saying, well, what do we do? Do we salute him? Because by that time, we didn't do any saluting. It was the officers had no rank, no insignia. And you sort of started to refer to him as Tom, Dick, or George Butler. You did it respectfully, of course, but it was, you know, because the Jap obviously would look for rank and try to get him fair, sort of thing. This was a general idea, I think. And this was Wingate coming across, so I said, you know, he's General Wingate, like, what do we do? So we had a quick discussion among ourselves. I said, let's just give him an eyes right as we go past him, which we did. And he just walked past and he just turned round. He says, we're not doing so bad, are we? So I says, well, he says, what do you mean? It's because so many of the gliders are taken off. He says, some of them are doing well and have got through. And we didn't know. Nobody's told us anything. And after that, we did get a quick getting a report about what was going on, you see, that a glider had, you know, got getting through, sort of thing. Or some hadn't, you know, hadn't managed to take off, or a tow rope had broken, things like that. So we did get a little bit of information, came back. That's the only other time, as I say, was actually in White City. And this was just before he got killed. He came round our positions.
What happened then?
Well, we flew into
Perhaps you'd better wait until we come
back. Yeah, this is what I'm thinking.
This first time, it was just an informal meeting.
That was all. Just an informal passing word that he said to us at the time.
What did he look like?
As he always looked like, with his great big. He used to wear a pith helmet. Not we all wore the bush hats. But he always had this battered old topi on. And in slacks and safari jacket. More or less as Wingate always looked when you saw him.
Was he like a typical British Army officer?
Well, he was like our officers at the time. But none of us were very smart. In appearances, if you can walk around as we did with all that lot on and live as we live, then you don't stay very tidy for long. And Wingate had been up there all that time with the training and with the HQ. So he was a typical general, I would say, that under those conditions.
Then what happened after you met Wingate?
Well, I suppose the next thing is that we was on our way in.
Can you describe that in detail?
No, not really. I can't remember much about it. I can remember getting on these gliders and the pilot went to the back of the thing and lifted it up and we all had to move bunch forward because he said it was tail heavy. And with that I think we was on our way. I really was, remember being petrified, I think is a word, at that time in this thing. And I don't know, I just can't remember much about it until the next thing was in Broadway.
Were mules in your glider?
Not in our glider, no. No, the mules went separately. I think, I can't really say whether the mules actually went in the gliders. I think some of them did. But also some went into the DCs. The decoder.
What were you taking with you, personally, in the glider?
All our own, only our personal equipment.
What were you armed with?
Was armed with Lee Enfields. Rifles, ammunition.
And grenades?
Grenades. I think probably had about six grenades. I think we had the grenades in the basic pouches. We had the big pack on our back, and one at each side of your pack. They had sewn another one of these basic pouches, one each side, and each one of these. Each man had three Bren gun magazines. So apart from your own ammunition, your own rifle, you did carry three Bren gun magazines, which was for your Bren gunner.
Did you carry personal rations?
Yes, we had 5 days ration of 5 days K rations. These we began to hate.
Were these American rations?
These are American emergency rations.
Why did you hurt them?
Have you ever seen one?
No.
Well, the monotonous of the thing. I mean, these K rations were. You got three of these K rations a day, and they were in something like the old-fashioned salt packet. What would be 9 inches high and about 3 inches across. and it consisted of a 4-ounce tin of processed cheese. This would be probably one meal. There was, I think, 4 biscuits, which was about 3 inches by half an inch across, a packet of chewing gum, 4 cigarettes, and probably a sachet of coffee. In another one, it would be 4 ounces in a processed, probably a little packet of glucose sweets in one. Another one would probably consist of processed beef or something. And then the other one would be 4 ounces in a chopped ham and egg in this other one, with the same biscuits, the same chewing gum. One had coffee in, one had something that resembled a squished up Oxo cube type of thing, and the other would have a lemonade mixture. And these were in 3 separate rations for the day. There was breakfast, dinner and supper. And you just had nothing but these. And I think one had some compressed fruit bar or something in it. These is what you got for each meal. We, on your supply drop, they usually put on top of the container, they usually put a load of tea bags and milk bags. Not tea bags as we know them now. These were made of flannelette, just material, with a little bit of tea in it, one with a little bit of dried milk in. And these used to come down on top, so you're not, you did occasionally get your cup of tea, which was more often than not, when you got a supply drop, you did get so many of these tea bags and so many of these milk bags issued each. And these was a basic ration that we had the whole time we was in there. We landed in at Broadway. This was to be our stronghold.
Do you remember what the landing was like?
Well, I remember it was very bumpy, and I don't